We're back here on Pracademically Speaking in a new year, and we want to bring a new term to you for a new year, justice reinvestment. Launched in 2010 by the U.S. Department of Justice and the Pew Charitable Trust, the Justice Reinvestment Initiative is a data-driven approach to improving public safety and reducing criminal justice spending. How exactly does it work, and has it been effective? We'll explore this on today's episode. Well, hi, I'm Brett Buckland. You're listening to Pracademically Speaking, a conversation where ideas and numbers get real. Today, I'm going to have a conversation with Jim Stover. He's the JRI-2 coordinator at the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections, and he'll tell you what exactly that means. And we're going to talk about justice reinvestment, or JRI for short. Jim, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Dr. Buckland. Appreciate it.
Good to have you on. We've gone way back. We were just talking right before we go on. We go back to 2001, I think, when Jim was working at our correctional boot camp. And I think that's when I first met you, Jim. And we started working on recidivism rates for the boot camp, evaluating the boot camp back then. And
yeah, you've always been an ally for us and someone we reached out to a lot of times to get a lot of information to help guide where we move forward or didn't move forward.
And that takes us to where you are today, which is the JRI coordinator for the department. But we need to backtrack a little bit and just explain to our listeners what JRI is, or justice reinvestment. So I'm going to explain a little bit about what justice reinvestment is, and feel free to jump in, Jim, and
absolutely,
if you have anything. But justice reinvestment is really a way to an initiative that was introduced nationally to reduce prison population, save correctional cost, and reduce crime and recidivism rates. So very ambitious. Looking at Pennsylvania, what we experienced historically is that before 1980, back to about 1940, which is the furthest back that we keep numbers, our inmate population was about 8,000 inmates. Hard to believe. Today, we're up to 39,000 inmates, but we actually peaked in 2012 at 51,000, almost 52,000 inmates. So we went from 8,000 inmates in 1980 to 52,000 inmates in 2012. The PA general population did not increase by that much over the last 30 or 40 years. So something's going on. Corrections is the number three spending in the state budget, behind education and Department of Human Services. Our budget's grown to about $3 billion a year. So the taxpayers are spending a lot of money on corrections. We have a high prison population relative to our crime rate. Our crime rate is still pretty high. And our recidivism rates, as we've talked about on this show and other episodes, our recidivism rates are pretty high as well. And so what justice reinvestment, the Justice Reinvestment Initiative really attempts to do is to find data-driven solutions to what has been driving the prison population growth, implement some policies that will address those drivers of the prison population, and then reinvest some of those savings into long-term strategies that will continue to keep the prison population down. Because as we're spending more and more in corrections, we're taking away from other things like early childhood education, from policing resources, things that will prevent people from getting to the Department of Corrections in the first place, but we don't have money to spend on those things because we're pouring so much money into the prison system. So that's the idea with JRI, or Justice Reinvestment. That's the reinvestment part of that, is really finding data-driven ways to reduce the prison population, save that money, and then reinvest some of that money into early initiatives that will continue to reduce the prison population, reduce recidivism, keep crime rates down, and keep that cost down over time. Now, just for the listeners, in terms of the history of JRI in Pennsylvania, we first launched JRI in 2011, 2012. That was what we called JRI-1 in Pennsylvania. And that was under Governor Corbett at the time. And Our former secretary, John Wetzel, we were just talking about before the show started, was Governor Corbett's secretary of corrections. He really championed this initiative to bring it to Pennsylvania. And Jim, tell us a little bit about some of the initiatives in JRI 1 that were introduced, some of those data-driven strategies that were recognized through JRI 1 and addressed through the first JRI initiative.
So basically, we had the boot camp program, you know, the six-month military-style program that leads to getting out of prison early. That program's been in effect since the early 90s, and there were some changes with JRI 1 that allowed more people into that program, opened up the doors a little bit. Probably at our height, we were seeing about 450 graduates each year. I know we were tracking some cost savings and things associated with that, and it was, you know, millions and millions of dollars. So very effective cost savings-wise, but more importantly, I think with JRI 1, we wanted to take a look at a different way to deal with incarceration. Standardized incarceration, most of us would probably agree, is necessary in certain situations. So taking that to the side, it doesn't work for the average person that isn't dealing with those intense violence, long-term criminal history issues. And of course, if our numbers went from 8,000, you know, to 50,000 people, we have to say there's a large part of those people that need to do something different. Right. So I think what was amazing was fascinating. John Wetzel said, you know, we have to get outside the box. Standardized corrections, you know, locking them up, doing this period of time and getting out, it wasn't effective. So how are we going to be effective? So we instituted this for the reasons you mentioned, Brett, but also because we wanted to help the people. Right. Something different. The standard revolving door that comes in and out, you know, it had to stop. And so that's what JRI 1 was really managing to try to attempt to do. And it did it very well. Obviously, the boot camp program was a part of that. The SIP, the State Intermediate Punishment Program, another example of legislation that helped with that. Those two areas were extremely effective. Both the department, yourself, the PA Sentencing Commission did recidivism studies and looked at those month or year after year. And those came out to be effective, both programs. With that being said, though, there was a big issue with that, and that was all the people that were eligible for those programs, there was a mechanism that required the courts to make the eligibility. That meant we only got about 20, 25% of those that were actually eligible into those programs. So there were a pile of inmates that wanted to do the program but couldn't because somebody didn't say beforehand, hey, you should do this program or you could do this program. And so that leads us into maybe JRI 2 and mm-hmm. where that went.
So before we get to JRI 2, I want to ask you about what some of those programs are that you're referring to that had low referral rates in JRI 1. But I also want to highlight something that you said there, which is the humanity part of this, of JRI, Justice Reinvestment in general. It's not just about cost savings, reducing the prison population, but the human cost of having 51,000 people in prison and what that means for not only those individuals, but their families. And so I think that sometimes is missed, and I'm glad you brought that up on justice reinvestment, because it's not all dollars and cents. Obviously, that's important to the taxpayers. We're spending a lot of money on corrections. And I think the other part of that, too, that was really an important component of justice reinvestment was the bipartisanship of justice reinvestment. It started with the first one under Governor Corbett, a Republican governor. We'll get to JRI 2 in a second. And that was under Governor Wolf, a Democrat governor. So you had a Republican governor, you had a Democrat governor, you had Democrat Josh Shapiro, who was the attorney general at the time, who was spearheading the Justice Reinvestment 2 initiative. And so it was really bipartisan, and I thought that was a great part of Justice Reinvestment 2, was getting all the stakeholders around the table from all sides, from all angles within the criminal justice system, all sides of the political spectrum, and coming to consensus-based solutions to these problems, to not only the cost, but the human capital part that you mentioned, the high prison population, the high recidivism, and the high crime rate. So I wanted to ask, what are some of those programs that you referred to that we tried to expand in the first justice reinvestment but we're still showing low referral rates. Tell us a little bit about some of what those programs are.
So two of the programs I mentioned, Boot Camp and SIP. So SIP was the State Intermediate Punishment Program. That was a flat two-year sentence. So what that means, if you had a drug or alcohol problem, the court could refer you to us for an evaluation. The department would evaluate and say, yes, they meet the criteria. They have a severe enough drug and alcohol problem. And we would put them in this 24-month-long flat sentence program. Very effective, had lots of treatment, step-down treatment, which I think is key, right? So we start with our most intensive treatment program, and we step down to a little less intensive, working our way to ultimately being in the community, going back to work, living at home, doing the right thing. The beauty of that is you have somebody walking with you every step of the way. You have people assigned to help you each step of the way. And that was the success of that program. So we also, at the same time, have had the boot camp program for, you know, 30 plus years now. And that's where I worked. I spent 20 years up at the boot camp doing that, started off in that program. There is something about military concepts and discipline and applying cognitive behavioral therapy to that is effective, works, people love it. You know, when you're doing a drug and alcohol class and you know someone's maybe not doing what they're supposed to do, and you look at the class and say, let's get down and let's do some push-ups right now to get your mind straight, and you get back up, like, it works for young people, young adults, and it really gets them passionate about themselves. It builds that self-esteem. We worked hard on teamwork in that program, and that program was really effective at doing that.
And the research was always great on our boot camp, always has been great, and I think it's really the combination of that military boot camp with the treatment that we did there that made that program so effective. But we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back. We're going to roll into Justice Reinvestment 2 under Governor Wolf and hear also some personal stories about your role and experience with JRI and some of what you're seeing on the ground with Justice Reinvestment. So we'll be right back after the break.
You're listening to Pracademically Speaking, a production of the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections. Please share or cite any of the guests or content you hear on this podcast, but do not alter the audio in any way. Check for resources or publications mentioned in this episode in the show notes. Now, back to the host.
Okay, we're back. This is Brett Buckland on Pracademically Speaking with Jim Stover, the department's JRI2 coordinator for Pennsylvania Department of Corrections. We've been talking about justice reinvestment and the history of justice reinvestment in Pennsylvania, key criminal justice reform legislation under both a Republican and a Democrat governor. And we started out talking about what we call JRI1, and now we're up to JRI2. And so, Jim, tell us a little bit about JRI2, or Justice Reinvestment 2, which was our one under Governor Wolf. And what were we trying to accomplish under JRI2?
I think what happened with JRI2 is we took the things that worked really well under JRI1, and we took the areas that didn't, and we fixed those areas. So, for example, we talked about our referrals being low because we needed the courts to refer them. They changed that, and now the courts don't need to refer somebody. As long as they don't object, we can look at those. And we review every single inmate that comes into the state system. So, 8,000-9,000 inmates a year get a review by our staff, every single one of them, for all three program tracks, which would be the boot camp, the state drug treatment program, and the short sentence parole track. You know, we also took the state intermediate punishment program, which was absolutely, a fantastic program, but underutilized. We now have increased the referrals. I think the last I saw, 5,000 people entered into that program, yeah, which is remarkable considering we had COVID that really...
And of course, we had to rename it a different name.
Yep, state drug treatment program, yep. Which I think people like. But we, you know, we switched over to that program using the same model as state intermediate punishment, but allowing us to review people and determining eligibility and letting the department do that. And they added this position in October 2020, and really the final piece to JRI2 that we lacked in JRI1 is the liaison between the community and the Department of Corrections. And that's what I do. That's what my office oversees and does.
Because the implementation is key. The legislators can sign the bill, yep, and the governor can sign the bill. They can pass the bill, but actually implementing it is the hard work. And I thought it was genius to create your position to really be on the ground and helped to actually implement the reforms that were passed under JRI 1 and JRI 2.
Well, and working in these programs for so long, I was able to bring that in and help the staff and the department. I understand what they go through each day, so I'm able to help build a system that helps them process these people, but also being able to work with the attorneys, the judges, the families. I mean, my phone coming down here today, I returned 4 phone calls. 2 were from families and 2 were from attorneys asking me, hey, I've got a person coming up for sentencing. How should we structure this sentence to be able to make them most appropriate for state drug treatment program? I've got families that call me on a regular basis and say, you know, I have a lady that just called me in the last couple months. Her son's from North Carolina originally, arrested in Pennsylvania. She had no clue how our system works. So I can walk her through. This is what it looks like. This is what he's going to go through. We worked in. He just started the program actually 2 weeks ago. He just started doing the state drug treatment program. And she called me and she said, you know, she said, I don't know what I would do if I didn't have somebody to call who could ease my nerves, because as a mother, he's a good kid. He made one mistake, you know, and he's in. Those calls are what make this position matter. That's what makes it important for me. This is what I like waking up in the morning, and I get those.
That's why I wanted to have you on, because a lot of times I'm seeing the numbers, but hearing that perspective of families, and we're wrapping up. I do want to give the listeners a sense of, from a numbers perspective, what we accomplished, but then end with hearing a little bit more about how you have seen this impacted real people. But in terms of the goals of JRI 1 and JRI 2, justice reinvestment, in the first one, we reduced by about 1,500 inmates. We're down by another about 1,500 inmates as a result of JRI 2. So 3,000 inmates saved about probably $20 to $30 million as a result. Under the first justice reinvestment, we're actually able to close some prisons and get some cost savings from that. And we were able to reinvest, as the reinvestment part suggests, we were able to reinvest some of that into county probation, into the Pennsylvania Commission on Sentencing for sentencing reform, into policing, effective policing practices, into paying the counties to keep shorter term inmates, right, so that they don't have to come to state prison, but we can keep them at the state level. So really both Justice Reinvestment 1 and Justice Reinvestment 2 have been successful on their accomplishing their goals. But those are numbers. And I want to just end with hearing from you how you see the success of both JRI 1 and JRI 2 from your perspective. How do you see the success?
I think it's amazing and remarkable in many ways. I'm a numbers guy too. I love the numbers. I got to give credit to our staff in the department, from field parole people to institutional staff to the executive staff. Like, amazing the people that come together for this, because people realize this is about people. You know, these are real people. These are not just numbers. My favorite, 2 months ago, I received a call. Talked to this inmate's mother, okay, this candidate's mother. And she called me almost 2 years ago, and she was crying, and she said, my son got sentenced, and, you know, I need him to get help, and, you know, can you look at his case? And we looked at his case, and I told her, I said, you know, he's going to get into the state drug treatment program, and this is what's going to look like. And I walked her through, and she was pretty good. She called me probably every week for about a month and just basically said, hey, you know, I talked to him. He's really anxious. He's excited, but, you know, I just hope this works. He ended up going through the program. He went out into the community, and she's called me probably 3 or 4 times while he's been through the community phases, because he's run into some problems, some things he wasn't sure of how to do. And so she wanted some advice on where he could go for some help. And we gave that, because, like I said, we walk with them each step of the way. The most beautiful thing was, as I got to know this mother who was, you know, she was distraught. She was scared. She didn't know what to do for her son. And, you know, her son was a grown man, but he was struggling, right? Sure. Like so many do. And she said that the thing that broke her heart was she had to take over custody of his 2 children. Because the mother had her issues, and she said, I have to take care of these 2 grandchildren, and he doesn't have custody because, you know, he hasn't been able to get that. She called me 2 months ago, and I thought, oh, no, you know, what's happening now? He should be just about done. And she said, I'm calling you. I said, yeah. I said, is everything okay? Everything's wonderful. She said, I'm calling to tell you one thing. She said, you gave me my son back.
Oh, wow.
Because of what you did and your programs, she said, you all gave me my son back. She said, that's what that did. She said, do you know he's a welder now? He has a good job. He makes good money. So the first time in his life, she said, he has full custody of his children. She said, you gave me my son back.
That's amazing.
And that's all we can ask for. Like that's an awesome story.
And I'm sure she just appreciated having someone personal at the department to talk to. And so I appreciate your role in justice reinvestment and appreciate you being on the show today. Unfortunately, we're out of time. We could probably go another half hour. I'm going to have you back on and we'll talk about maybe justice reinvestment 3. We'll see where this governor wants to go with that. But thanks for being on the show, Jim, and appreciate your what you do for the department and your input on justice reinvestment.
My honor. Thank you.
We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening. Check out Pracademically Speaking wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. This is the conversation where ideas and numbers get real, on the ground and in practice. Pracademically Speaking is a production of the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections.